For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Let Me Tell You. Now, here's Joan Hamburg.
Welcome to Let Me Tell You. That's my original podcast. We do it every single week. And this podcast is going to let you in on my conversation with Sharon Gless. She has written a memoir about her life, her growing up in Hollywood from a very prominent family, what it was like being part of the studio. She was a contract player for Universal. And then as time went on in the 80s, she was pushed into accepting the role of Cagney in Cagney and Lacey, one of the great TV shows that broke grounds, won all kinds of awards, and then was in Queer as Folk, Burn Notice, and so many movies, plays, shows. She's amazing and funny and dear, and I got the biggest kick out of reading her memoir. So I know you're going to enjoy it. Settle back, Let Me Tell You, with Sharon Gless, straight ahead. Welcome, everyone, to the Joan Hamburg Show, and I am excited because I am a big fan of Sharon Gless, who has finally written her memoir. Apparently, there were complaints, and I can't tell you what a kick I got out of this book. It took me through such great times, and when everyone, I'm so sick of virus, morning, noon, and night,
I know.
That, right, to read, apparently, there were complaints about Sharon, about her family, about Cagney and Lacey, Queer as Folk, Burn Notice. And wait, your husband just mentioned one more. What one did I leave out?
The Trials of Rosie O'Neill.
Oh, yes. I didn't want to forget
it's a series he created for me right after. Okay.
But I loved hearing about a different Hollywood and when there were players who had contracts and life was just totally different. But explain, I'm curious, Sharon, what made you at this time decide you want to do a book and share your family, warts and all?
Well, the truth is, Joan, I went into CBS, my home of Cagney and Lacey.
Right.
Many years later, after I had done my seventh series, I can't remember. But anyway, they asked to meet me, knowing the series I was shooting was about to end. And Nina Tassler, the head of CBS, says, "Welcome home, Sharon." I was so touched. I thought, God, this is wonderful. And so I sat for an hour waiting for them to offer me a series. And at the end of the hour, Nina says, "Sharon, you know, we own Simon & Schuster." I said, "I didn't know that." She said, "Yes, and you have a book in you." I said, "Nina, I've never written." And she said, "I know that, but you're a storyteller." So she offered me, Simon & Schuster, the president, called me the next day. And I waited a year and I went to see him and I read one chapter to him. And that's how I got he signed me.
And that's the part.
I came up with the title first. And it was an expression I used to use about my drinking. And, you know, I'd always make jokes about it. And so apparently there were complaints with something that I had said earlier that always made Barney laugh. And I said, that's my title. And the title informed.
Right.
Even living in Hancock Park in fancy L.A. doesn't be complained about.
No. But you know what? It's one thing to say, you know, you've got a book in you. It's another thing for you to go home and write a book. That's so hard to sit there and write a book. It's
Joan,
like,
I never really enjoyed being a writer, and that's why it took me so long. But I do now enjoy being an author because I get to talk to you.
No, and it's interesting when you write your life and you look back and, hey, it's okay. It's really cathartic.
Yeah, it was. It was not my intention. But I realized as I was writing the last chapter, which was actually the hardest, that I did it with I had to look in the mirror, and I had no booze and no cigarettes to put a screen up, you know, right around my heart. And I became proud of myself by the end. I've really had a wonderful life, but there were a lot of complaints. And I had a grandmother who was daunting.
Yeah, what a character she is. She's her own book.
But she was a character, and she was like out of a movie. I think Helen Hayes would be playing. And I was her favorite of 17 grandchildren, but that made her the roughest on me. Mm. And she held the purse strings. And I don't have to tell anyone, I'm sure, who's listening. If someone else holds the purse strings, you have to dance.
Right. And they did dance. The family danced.
Boy.
And you learned early on how to make sure grandma.
And I learned that I needed to earn my own living. As long as someone else was holding the purse strings, I had to cooperate. And I'm not saying that the decisions I've made in my life have all been stellar, but at least they were my choices.
And it was interesting. Here you come from this L.A. family. I mean, I never knew anyone who was from L.A. You have five generations there. And
Right. Even
when you were a kid and went to boarding school and gained a little weight, which everyone gains at boarding school or college or anything else. I mean, we eat our way through angst and anxiety.
Right. Gained a lot of weight.
Right, a lot. It was your grandmother that you worried about.
Well, she locked me up after I got out of boarding school. She locked me up in her house in Carmel and
put you on a diet.
She put me on a diet because I was having to make, in those days, they had debutante balls. It's embarrassing now, but.
No, they still have them.
Oh, wow. Anyway, my grandmother said, I'll be damned if you're going to walk out there looking like Moby Dick in a white dress. So she locked me up and took 40 pounds off of me. That was her big complaint. But the book discusses the emotion of the journey with her and kind of the joy of walking out that night and showing her my dress. Because it was very, very hard at the time. It makes me cry just to talk about it.
No, and you when you describe that, you know, when I was reading that and what it was like, it brought me back to one of my college roommates who had a similar situation, you know, where she had to please the mother and the grandma. And before they came on visiting day, I still remember we had something in those days called Merry Widows.
Oh, sure.
Which, remember the strapless?
I used to sleep in mine when I was young because it was too hard to put on in the morning. So I put it on the night before.
Exactly. And it took two of us to strap her in the Merry Widow before visiting day. So the parents and the grandma wouldn't think she was as chubby as she was.
I know.
So, I mean, we all go through.
The trick is it does shove everything up or down. So if you don't get away with it.
Yeah, no, I just like you don't get away with cheating on food with grandma's eagle eyes, you know, thinking you pulled a fast one. I'm talking
exactly
to Sharon Gless. Apparently there were complaints, her brand new book about coming of age in Hollywood, deciding despite a lot of people saying no, 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 becoming an actress. She knew from the time she was just a young kid that this is something she had to do. And the studio system was so different in those days. I loved reading about it. You became a contract player. Well, that
Thank
wasn't
you.
Easy.
No. Right? Well, it was, I didn't know I was going to be getting that contract. I just, as I say in the book, this magical thing happened as a mistake on stage one night. I was in a little play, just folding chairs. We didn't charge anybody, you know, ran two nights, but I made a terrible mistake the opening night. And there was a man sitting in the audience that thought it was so funny. He called me from Universal Studios and introduced me to the head of talent. And I got a contract there. 7 years, 10 years. They're 7 year contracts, but I was there 10 years, and now I'm the last. I was the last person to leave.
Wow,
it's basically the last contract player in Hollywood.
It's really hard to believe that, but that was the time. And also, Sharon, who worked all the time in Kojak and the Rockford Files, on Bob Newhart, on all our great shows, and then not happily, but sort of being pushed into it, playing Cagney on Cagney and Lacey, where you won every award sort of known to man, and then The Trials of Rosie O'Neill, Queer as Folk, and it went on and on. I mean, most people, my actor friends, say every Monday we have that thing in the pit of our stomachs. Am I going to work this week? Am I going to get called? What's going to happen? And
yes,
you worked all the time.
I've just been very, very blessed. Please know I do not take this casually. When I decided it's really what I wanted to do, the world opened up. I consider it magic, or if you dream really, really hard, you know.
Right.
Somebody's out there who's listening and picks you. And then to walk into Cagney and Lacey, which I turned down twice. Barney says actors are not always the best judges of material.
Right, and he was, that was his show.
Very much so, yes. And I was very, obviously that was the most important show probably because it took my life totally into a new direction. And apparently changed many lives, that show did. I'm proud of it.
Right, and it changed the lives of a lot of people because your show dealt with topics that no one dealt with, and that
ever
wasn't openly discussed like that. And there you were in front of, what, 30 million people talking about.
I know.
About,
in those days, right, there were only three networks, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And so we had, I think, 30 million viewers, which is astounding. And we dealt with subject matters, Joan, that had never been touched and spoken of. Sexism, breast cancer, spousal abuse, teenage sex, abortion, alcoholism. I mean, Cagney took a real tumble on that show.
Right.
But it was the first time they'd ever had a hero of the series fall from grace.
But you did,
and she did
so much. That's right. The alcoholism thing, which you write about, was a big deal because it was so real that you couldn't believe you were watching it. And it turned out you didn't believe it was you, but it turned out that character suddenly really became you. And
yes,
you had a deal.
I did. I mean, I did not go lightly to that dark night, as that's the book. But I, yes, Ronnie Meyer, my agent, took me to dinner one night and just nailed me. Said, I think you're alcoholic. He just called me the other day, he read the book. Said, I don't remember being that hard on you. I said, you were. But I didn't see it in myself. And Joan, I need to say something. I was cold stone sober when I did those scenes on Cagney. I was not drunk. I was not drinking when I did those scenes. And it's important that people know that because I was meeting with Maggie Smith one day, and she said, I love those drunk scenes of you and Cagney and Lacey, best I've seen on TV. And I said, Maggie, I was not drunk when I did those scenes. Press is saying is life imitating art. And she said, oh, honey, you can't do that kind of work to not be sober.
Yeah. And look what happened. Of course you did that kind of work. And that was what made you different from so many other performers. You put so much into Cagney, into every part, with so many layers, that it was real. And that's your gift. And that's from the time you were just a kid, you worked. You had that gift that people saw that. And when it's so hard for so many people, right, to get work, you got
I'm so sorry. I didn't start working as an actress until I was 28 years old.
Right.
I entered the business late in life, but the head of Universal said, Sharon, I think you've been acting all your life. Now we're just going to pay you for it.
That's a great gift, too. And then it was on Cagney and Lacey that, and you always had loves and relationships, but the big one came along at a different stage in life.
That's right.
And we love
referring to my husband, Barney.
To your husband, Barney.
My now husband, Barney.
Of course, you're now, and I hope forever, husband, Barney.
Forever, that's right. I introduced him as my first husband, and he introduces me as his last wife, please God.
You know what? I love that. And I have a friend who does that, too. He says, you know what? I had a lot of wives, but this one is the best. The last one is the keeper. So
it's been 30 years now, but it was rough going. I tell the story. And I tell the truth. Of how we came together, which was very difficult.
And he was your boss, too.
He was my boss. He created Cagney and Lacey. He was the executive producer.
Right.
He was the first feminist I ever met.
And?
That I knew of. And the thing with being married to a feminist is he says things like, you wanted equality, open your own door. wait a minute. I'm still suffering from the Cinderella syndrome. Women my age definitely want equality and fought for it. But we also, when we were young, we still were sort of believed that Walt Disney was telling the truth about relationships.
Right. You know, we objected to a lot of stuff. But if the trucker didn't whistle on the street, we were mortally offended.
That's right.
I mean, it was a brave new time. But it's one thing when it's your boss and he has to tell you what to do in many ways or how to do it or what's good and what's not so good. And then to fall for him. I didn't mind.
I couldn't stand him when I first met him. But then I gained tremendous respect for him as a producer. I saw what he was doing. We had no idea the impact we were having because Tyne and I didn't. Barney did. But Tyne and I worked on a soundstage. It's not like we were on stage in the theater. People were applauding. We had work to do. We were on a soundstage for 12, 18 hours a day. And we didn't realize the impact we were having out there where other women's lives were being changed because of the scripts that Barney was not authoring, but, you know, controlled.
Right.
Many of our writers were women. Several of our directors were women.
And that was unusual. Yeah, I was going to say, no one did that.
No. And while we were on the air, I know you didn't ask me this, but while we were on the air, the 6 years, no other woman won the Emmy. Now, Tyne won 4 and I won 2. I'm okay with it, Joan. But the good news is that I don't know if we won it because we were so great. We won it because we had the material. And in the 80s, no one was writing for women.
Right. And there it was.
And there it was.
And it was life-changing for you, and it was really life-changing for the industry. And I love the story in the book when Cagney and Lacey, a big hit show, was canceled for obviously no reason.
Right.
And what you guys did with Barney as the leader to get that show back.
He wrote, it does show the power of the people. He wrote... got all the letters that people had written in saying how upset they were. And he got them all together himself, got Tyne's and mine and his own. And he wrote a letter to each person asking them to write a letter to their affiliate station and to the New York Times, I believe. And all these letters, people responded. They were all sent to CBS in Los Angeles, and they became overwhelmed. And it shows that people have a choice. They have a vote. They can, and they, the people brought us back.
By the thousands everywhere.
Oh, hundreds of thousands there. Yeah.
But they had no choice but to pay attention.
I know, and CBS said, I guess we made a mistake. So they had to redo Times in my contract. That was sweet.
Right.
And at that, it's tasteless to discuss money, but the nice thing was at that time we became the highest paid women in television.
Right, which was extraordinary.
We and never Sharon, asked men made.
Yeah, but of course not. Everyone was still deferential. You were happy to get it. Oh, I'm so lucky. You know,
I didn't even think to ask what the men made. I was just so happy that we were right? brought back. We were the winners.
I'm lucky. When you say to a guy, how did you get there or what contributed to your success? Well, they'll modestly say, I'm gifted, I'm brilliant, I had this, I had that. A woman would say, luck, I'm lucky, you know, rather than say, you know, anything else. But Sharon, when you decided that maybe working in this industry that way, and when you do a daily show, it's a killer all the time.
You should know.
What was that like for you? Was it hard? Have you adapted or do you want to go back and do something?
I want to go back. I love every minute of it, Joan. Every minute I was on a set. Pardon me. I don't remember getting tired. We'd work sometimes 18 hours a day, but I just, pardon me, got off on it. I love to work. I've done many series now. I've been blessed. And pardon me. I've had a wonderful time. I never got bored on a set. The show wasn't good. There was one show where I did a four-parter guest spot. I was unhappy. But never, ever, ever again. I love it. And I love a TV series. It's, you have a family that's with you, hopefully for years. You do become a family.
Okay, and well, we're ready. We're ready for you to come back. Do you keep up with Tyne Daly?
I talk to Tyne Daly almost every day. Mm-hmm. Now, since COVID, we started checking in with each other. And Joan, Tyne's mother had a great expression. Sweat makes a great cement. And Tyne Daly and I sweat together for 6 years against all odds, being called names. And we are cemented for life.
Which is wonderful. And that was part of what worked on that show, which originally had not worked. That connection, that compatibility, we believed every minute of it.
Thank you.
No, and that's the truth. All right, so we're ready for you to come back.
Thank you. Well, I've done 9. Someone told me I was doing an interview that I had done 9 series. I didn't realize that. And Betty White had done 10. Mm. And I said, well, I want to step up there with Betty. But now Betty's not with us. She'll always be with us. But anyway, I have another one in me. So
okay. And even, Sharon, this book could turn into a series. You know, that young girl from that family with the grandpa who was the lawyer to every major player and leader in Hollywood. And her life is a great adventure. We love that. When you see TV shows, remember like Emily in Paris or shows like that. Hey, how about Sharon in L.A.?
Which that would be wonderful.
Much more
realistic.
It'd be
a miniseries. Yeah.
Barney can do it.
I tried to talk him into, but he says he's done. He likes the tropics.
I know, but he could do it in the tropics.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll talk about that next time. I love the book. I love visiting with you.
Come visit again. I'm so thrilled. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Sharon Gless, apparently there were complaints. Honestly, it cheered me up. I didn't think about COVID. I thought about nothing but what was going on and what Hollywood was like in those days and what it was like to be an actress, what it was like to come from a family that looked on the outside like perfect and had all these issues. And here she is, taking us by the hand on a wonderful journey. Congratulations and enjoy. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Joan.
All the best. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC. More to come. Stay tuned.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.